Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, allies, and students scattered around the world, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on the morning of November 28th, 2012. And a glorious morning it is. It's dawn here in Andalusia, beautifully crisp, cool, and crystal clear autumn day, late autumn, early winter day. And I had the pleasure this morning of stepping out on the terrace about an hour ago to see the sight of Venus hanging in the sky, and directly above Venus, Saturn. The two of them together reminded me of those kind of two-part pendants that women wear for earrings, you know, with the smaller jewel, say, attached to the lobe of the ear, and then there is a short chain and a larger jewel, or in this case, the pearl of Venus, hanging directly below it. Amazingly, Venus, which was sitting below and to the east of Spica, made a perfect triangle with the star Arcturus, which is in the constellation of the shepherd, Bootes, which is situated above the Virgin. I took a screenshot of these on Stellarium, and I'll include them with this talk so they can be posted in the NAV briefing page. So there's a tall, perfectly symmetrical, equilateral triangle with Arcturus at the apex, Venus and Saturn at the lower left corner, Spica at the lower right corner. And then also I noted, although I didn't see it in the sky, that Mercury right now is present further into the constellation of the Balance or Scales, in fact approaching the fulcrum of the Scales. So Mercury was rising after Venus in the dawn sky today. And I would like to dedicate this talk to that spectacle. This would be a way to demonstrate to you something that I frequently experience in my role as a Turton and sky diviner. That is to say that there are moments of presence and clarity marked by a sky-mind interface. You see your mind in the sky. You have the sky in your mind. And in fact, sky and mind, while I would not say that they are the same, because it is erroneous syntax to speak of unity, they are not one thing. They are two things in a perfect union, in a wedding. And I take this omen, the conjunction of Venus and Saturn, to be the omen of Kamala's wedding. At the full moon of the Kamala shift of 2012 comes the announcement and instruction of Kamala's wedding. You might recall that in the last briefing, I devoted the first half hour to talking about the Kamala shift. And until this time around, until November 2012, as I said, I hadn't really gotten on her frequency. But man, oh man, woman, oh woman, child, oh child, I am on it now. And I have been drifting deliciously in and out of Kamala construction. Or Kamala instruction. Also, I would say Kamala construction, in that she is constructing some pretty vast and elegant structures of Dakini wisdom in my mind. I've been drifting in and out of her instruction now for about 2 weeks. And I can only say again that the quality of her presence is one of delicious warmth and sweetness. And the nature of her instruction is of an emotional richness and beauty that comes right into the personal from the transpersonal, I would say without question that this is one Mahavidya in the Shakti cluster who speaks in intimacy and who brings her frequency of instruction and releases her Dakini elixirs really into the zone of what we call our personal emotional life. Now you know that by and large, the Mahavidyas and the Diamond Sky Dakinis of the Shakti cluster operate transpersonally in the nitrogen zone. And the whole beauty and power of the Shakti cluster is in its transpersonal dynamic and the allure of the transpersonal. When you realize you have no life of your own, you have made a personal pact with VV. You realize a personal pact with VV that allows you to fulfill your life in a way that you could not if you remained only within the personal dimension of that life. What is so sad, what is so dangerous and pathetic and insane and demented and deranged about most human animals today, though they be well-intended people, though they even be good-hearted people, they just don't have an aim. They are not aimed. They do not have a transpersonal aim for their lives. And it's a sad truth, but without a transpersonal aim, your life is not going to deliver to you what you seek from it. And you will either fall into narcissism or codependency and lose the precious, high, transcendent potential of your own life in those emotional traps, both of which play in one way or another into the victim-perpetrator game. Victim-perpetrator bond. So it is through love in the personal, permeated by a transpersonal power of love and magic, that we are truly released. And I'm feeling this lately. And I must say, it feels glorious. It feels like nothing I've felt before. You know, when I use the term Dakini nectars, I ain't kidding, folks. It's something that you drink. You can taste it. You can taste it on your tongue when you are in that frequency with the instructing Dakini. So I'd like to talk to you today about something extremely personal, if I may do so. And I haven't spoken of this for a while, but I feel comfortable in talking about it again. Of course, it's the old Emma story, which I appear to be forever rehashing. But that is not exactly so, really, if you look closely at what I've said over the past 4 years. You remember that I came to a decisive liberation in the Dakini shift of 2009, wretched as that moment was, when I saw Emma for the last time in the Mondragon Plaza in Rwanda. Wretched as that moment was, I was handled by Tantra Mother. And remember that the supreme teaching of Vajrayogini is to reach the end of pretending, the releasement that comes at the end of pretending. And the lesson that I drew from that moment, which I've written on some of the Dakini notes on metahistory.org, that incomplete set of notes on the shifts of the lunar Shaktis, what I wrote was, there is no release without gratitude. And so I have been released for quite some time now from that fabled romance that went on the rocks so brutally for me after 13 months, and which it took me about 18 months to recover from. So why am I bringing it up again? Well, it has a lot to do with this glorious omen of Kamala's wedding. the wedding of Venus and Saturn in the sky. You see, the meeting of John and Emma was a meeting of Saturn and Venus. And I knew it at the time, and I spoke to her in that language because she actually enjoyed it when I talked astrology now and then, although I never ventured to do her chart except very too late and in a very awkward manner. So I didn't impose my astrological savvy on that woman. But I occasionally referred to celestial omens, and I showed her how to watch the sky, and she became quite a good student at that. And I mentioned to her that our meeting was like the marriage of Venus and Saturn. When I met her, I was, 2007? I was 61 years old, and she was 33. And so there was Venus, a nubile 33, the absolute picture of British nymphic nubility in the perfect hormonal ripeness of that age. And there was I, the old gent, the old satyr, Saturn character. And this was a powerful meeting. It wasn't a wedding, but we considered that it could be. And I did wish strongly at the beginning that it would be a wedding, because when I set eyes on Emma, it hit my sexual romantic addiction in a way that nothing else ever did before. Up until that time, I had always enjoyed, invited, and cultivated the company of women, of course. But no matter how much I enjoyed the intimate favors of a woman, I always wondered what the next one was going to be like, and if the one around the bend would be even more beautiful and even more enchanting. So that's what you call a serial sex and romance addiction. You know, in the Kalika path, you've got to know your addiction. And that was mine. That is mine. And so, needless to say, for me at 60-something, it was quite an impact to find this woman in my arms and in states of ravenous and delirious pleasure that we plunged into. And I said to her once, she herself wondered in some amazement at the intensity of what was between us. And she asked me once, you know, is this how it is? Is this how deep you can go? She said, how deep can we go with this? And I said, well, this is as deep as it gets. This is pornographic love, full-blown, delirious, and as deep as it gets. And it was. And for me, of course, the impact was assured by the fact that at the age of 61, I found myself at the end of a long period in my life of gruesome sexual deprivation. So basically, for about 18 years, I had not had any sexual relations except for one instance, which was an interlude and a very lovely one, and a break, as it were, in the middle of that 18-year period. But I can assure you that on the whole, those 18 years were sexually desolate. And I don't, looking back on it, I don't even know how I was able to live through it. It was so gruesome to be deprived of not just the sexual act, but all the playfulness and affection and touching and caressing and dancing of the senses and sensual exploration of body and soul that goes along with it. It was horrible. And so when Emma came into my arms, I was really, really thrilled and I was able to allow a kind of resurrection. In fact, I will be ever grateful to that woman because she was there at the moment when I could recover my sexuality and I could resurrect my sexuality with her. And I didn't do it completely. As a matter of fact, I got only about halfway up to speed before the whole thing crashed. But halfway ain't too bad. And it was really fantastic. And I found that all of my previous sexual experiences came together so that the rapport, the erotic rapport with Emma was fantastically rich. And I described also in the Dolman Kiss on Kali Rising just how that relationship began. And one of the things that made it so powerful, in addition to the obvious factors of an older man falling into the arms of such a young and nubile woman, was the power of the earth that was conferred upon us and conferred upon our love and attraction at the moment of the Dolman Kiss. So there was a great conspiracy of the infernal Dakini powers that brought John and Emma together in the spring of 2007. And that was, in a way, a prelude to Kamala's wedding. Today, I can really celebrate Kamala's wedding, even though Emma is not here beside me. She did not end up being the young witch that I would have with me to the end of my life, as I had witched her to be. I had witched her to be that witch. No. But the wedding is realized now. I realize the wedding now in another way, in a transcendent manner, which I can share with you, as I'll try to do in these following words. You know, I had occasion a couple of days ago, I don't even know why this happened. Oh yeah, it was because I got an email that had a link in it to one of my Grok talks. And I thought, well, why am I being taken back to this? So I clicked on the link and I listened to the talk a little bit. And it was the one in which I described how I went up to Infinity Ridge on the 24th of June, 2008, after Emma had dumped me. And I intended to have a telestic session and converse with Gaia on certain matters of human extinction, the way that Turtons do these things, or at least the way that her Gaian Turton does with her. And I couldn't, explained in the interview with Grok that I couldn't keep my mind on it because I was obsessing about this woman that I had lost. And let me tell you, folks, loss is real, and so is abandonment, and so is betrayal. And I had the triple dose with her. And so I went up there, and as I recall saying in this talk, I don't know if I've described it in any other of my interviews, that that was the moment when Kali struck me right between the eyes, you know, a 40-foot anaconda coil of Kalika illumination right between the eyes. And that was when she told me that I was in an initiation process since the moment that Emma walked out on me in this room right here where I'm standing on a Sunday early in April that year. Kali showed me at that moment upon the ridge that she had handled me, you could say. She had arranged me, as the Rakinis will do, so that I would tantrically convert everything that I experienced with Emma into a new initiatory art of planetary tantra. And so that meant that everything that I felt with them, everything that I did, all the intimations that we had together that were not fulfilled in that man-woman dynamic were nevertheless to be fulfilled in another way. That I was to do with what a tantrika does, and that is demonstrate the city of sutaka. Sutaka means rendering. Like when something is rendered into tallow. What is rendered into tallow? Is that fat? When fat is rendered, when butter is rendered into ghee. Likewise, the tantrika renders every single conceivable emotion, positive or negative, into a city. And that's what Kali told me I was going to do with all the things that I had felt in my 13 months with the fabled heroine of planetary tantra. And from that, planetary tantra was born. And so I have to say that right now, today, the process that Kali showed me on the ridge over 4 years ago is continuing apace. In fact, it's even picking up. Between now and then, I have converted quite a number of my experiences in that romance into initiatory tools. The Dakinis, I should say, have showed me and carried me through that conversion. The production of these Dakini elixirs. And well, the wedding that I might have had with that woman never took place. It wasn't a mundane wedding. It wasn't a wedding like you have according to the rules and regulations of society, although I guess we must have been considering it, because we did talk about merging our material resources. And that was a very big thing for Emma to do, to even consider that. And I dearly wanted to see that she would be the recipient of the material side of my life. And so the material sharing that a man and a woman find in a wedding, that is to say, to bring the resources of their life together and meld them, was part of my dream at that time. It's part of a dream that so many of us have. And I call that melding of resources, of life and love, Kamala's wedding. But what I see now is that Kamala, acting from the transpersonal, instructs us to achieve that wedding in the personal in a most remarkable way. And I'm just seeing how she does it. And so I can speak to you today as a tantrika who is still converting feelings, dreams, desires, particularly desires that I had at a particular moment in my life, for a particular woman who was 28 years younger than me, and I am still converting that experience into the tools and teachings of planetary tantra. And I can't tell you how good that feels. But I know you're a sensitive crowd, you're a touchy crowd. I know that you're deep, and I know that you can certainly get the feeling of what I'm saying. Now, the one particular thing The one particular point I want to make to you before I give you an outline of the Kamala instruction I'm receiving concerns an issue that I lived with Emma, which deeply, deeply affected me. And that was the issue of my male sexual desire for a woman. Let me tell you how the male desire operates when your addiction is to sexual and romantic intensity. It's a serial addiction, and no single woman can ever satisfy it. And so I had never allowed myself to let my desire stop at one woman. And so what happened was that we met, and then we went to visit that dolman. And after the dolman kiss, something happened to me that had never happened before in my life. I looked at her, and I knew that if I could have her in my life for the rest of my life, I would never wonder or think about being with another woman sexually. I would, as it were, be resolved to sexual exclusivity. Well, this was outrageous and unheard of in my career as a romantic, which goes back several millennia, I might say. So there it was, and that's what happened. And then it was by the desolation and impossibility of that very desire for exclusivity that I was plunged into the ordeal which brought forth Planetary Tantra. So Planetary Tantra came through me not because I fulfilled that desire for exclusivity with Emma, but because I was unable to fulfill it. Now, this gets to the really, really juicy part. This gets to the current part. Remember that the Shakti cluster is composed of two kinds of female infernal sacred feminine powers. The Mahavidyas, the 10 Mahavidyas drawn from the Sri Vidya tradition of goddess mysticism in southern India, if you want to have a reference or a precedent. And the diamond sky dakinis that are more typical of Tibetan Tantra and the northern realm of the Himalayas. And as Elizabeth English points out in her book on Vajrayogini, these Buddhist scholars clearly make a division between these two types of female powers of the supernatural, which we now, you and I, and those of us in the know, identify clearly and vividly as the powers of the planetary animal mother of Gaia Sophia herself. They are her qualities, they are her frequencies, they are her emanations. But they are two different kinds of emanations, because the Mahavidyas, as scholars tell us, are desideristic powers. That is to say, they work through desire and they grant desires, which is the traditional way people in India view these 10 emanations of Kali. Kamala, in particular, grants the desires of romantic love that is realized in permanent and exclusive bonding. Therefore, she oversees marriage and weddings. But the other six diamond sky dakinis, Elizabeth English tells us, belong to the class of liberationist powers of the sacred feminine. That is, they are concerned with the liberation of the mind rather than with the fulfillment of desire. And one of the beautiful things, one of the totally astoundingly wonderful things about the Shakti cluster at the heart of Planetary Tantra is that it melds and merges these two types of powers so that there is no contradiction between them. So that's why I've said things like, for instance, that Planetary Tantra is the liberation of the path of liberation, and that it is achieved by liberation through desire and not by liberation from desire. So liberation and desire are united in the dynamic of Planetary Tantra. So now I want you to consider for a moment what happened to my desire. The desire that I had for that woman, that blonde English woman, Emma, that I couldn't fulfill with her. What did I do? Do you think I abandoned it? Do you think I let it fade out? That I let it shrivel up and waste away? Do you think that I turned away from it in despair? No fucking way. I held that desire in my heart and held it as the highest desire of my life, even when I surrendered its attainment. And that is the art of Kala Tantra, to hold to your highest desire and surrender its attainment, but never surrender the desire itself. Now, to ordinary folks, and in fact to somebody that I knew closely at the time, who was an ally and a witness to my experiences in that romance, this is a formula for insanity and frustration. I mean, why would you hold on to the desire of something that you cannot attain? But you see, that is the secret of the power of sutaka, or rendering. Because if I hadn't held on to that desire, then the Dakinis would not have been able to convert it into a wisdom elixir, which it has now become. And so, open your mouth and stick out your tongue, because the drops of that elixir are falling from the sky this morning, from the Venus-Jupiter conjunction. And in the morning dew comes Kamala's instruction, which says, I teach passage of command in the union of love and death. Now, you know, in my previous talk, yes, my last briefing about Kamala, I indicated some of the aspects and that I'm picking up about her. For instance, that she teaches in dialogue, and that her teaching arises as a spontaneous shared realization in the intimate dialogue of two people in love, and especially when that dialogue touches the dire subjects of love and of death, including both aspects of death, that is, that you die and that you can cause to die. When the conversation includes that, then Kamala has a way to access us. And in that context of such a conversation about the union of love and death, her instruction proceeds. Now, I've got here in front of me on the desk a piece of notepaper covered on both sides and dated the 5th of November. And at that time, I sat down and I jotted down, by more or less by free association, some of the themes and topics and questions that are floating around in the atmosphere of the GNE. As you know, this is a vast experiment. One of the challenges is to focus and to concentrate on what is immediately achievable, because some of the perspectives and vistas of emotion and vision that come to be discovered in this experiment are so immense that it would take lifetimes to live into them and to realize them completely. So I decided to make a list, you're going to get a laugh out of this, of just some of the unfinished and developing themes in the GNE that have emerged. And this is not a complete list, that have emerged since summer of 2011. Okay, Mantis. Remember Mantis? Okay. 2, the role of the sun in the correction of Sophia. 3, the Kalki avatar, considered as an Andromedan version of the Perseus legend. 4, the decoding of the Perseus legend regarding the identity of the Medusa and the identity of Pegasus. These remain still undefined. 5, the central riddle of correction. I remember that. I told you I was going to do some crew notes on the central riddle of correction. Since I don't write crew notes much anymore and I'm talking more than writing, I didn't get around to putting that on paper, but there is a central riddle of correction that needs to be delineated. That was 6, right? Oh, 7, Jumanity. I've got some things to say about Jumanity and about Jewish ethics. That's coming around the bend. 8, well, how about the sevenfold calibration of Anthropos 10 and how it can be seen in terms of neurochemical and neurophysiological operations in your body? Okay, because each of the components of the calibration mixed and measured for the Anthropos by Sophia and Thelete has a neurochemical and physiochemical correlate, which is actually the carrier of that element of calibration, because, and I would bid you recall the principle of Mayavada Vedanta, that everything is material. Nous, nucleic acid, so forth and so on. Further elaborations on the calibration, which would involve making a clear distinction between the luminous epinoia, which was given after the calibration was made, and after the plasm or cytoplasmic dose of Anthropos was deposited, distinguishing the luminous epinoia from perinoia. Okay? Divine alchemy associated with the perigee moments of the GNA, the formulation of Anthropos 11 due to the operations of divine alchemy, due to the hits of the first attention applied to the human species by the planetary animal mother. Where are we now? We're down to, like, I guess, point 10, Gaian ethics. Always have something to say about that. 11, wow. Let's revisit the omen of remembrance, the omen of deliverance, the guidance of pleasure, the pleasure of guidance. Can always elucidate more on those points, can't we? 12, oh, channel 16, ooh. There's a, we're about now, I'd say what, about 10, 12 hours from the next lunar occultation of Jupiter. And that would be our third test of channel 16. Next point, I've lost track of the numbers now. Next, the return of the repressed. Remember I put out that clue when I haven't elaborated it further? The return of the repressed. Okay? Once again, how about this? The libido of the wisdom goddess. Ooh. Oh, wow. Wait till I get around to that one. Okay? The Kalika vow that I was discussing on Grok the Talk. The 3 points of love, war, and magic. And the vow made standing before the yonic triangle of Kali. That needs to be further elucidated, and that relates, of course, and leads into the taboo subject of the lethal strike, which is somewhat out of bounds for G&E, technically speaking. Formulation of venom in the scorpion. Oh, more about that coming up as the perigee moves definitively into the scorpion, making a number of hits through this winter and into the spring of 2013. Oh, another one. What are we up to now? 16, 17, 18 topics. The activity of the lunar nodes, not the lunar apogee and perigee, but the nodes, which are rotating now, the north node drifting backwards through the scales, the south node drifting backwards from the bull into the ram. What's that all about? The wisdom goddess resets the scales. This is an open theme. We can talk about it constantly as the G&E evolves. Further revelations about the apsides of Jupiter and the role it is playing in Sophia's correction. Further elucidation of the role of Saturn as the lightship and the role of Mars as the warship. And last but not least, ha ha ha, do you think I forgot this one? The Shiva grids. So look, how can we handle this abundance of riches? This is an embarrassment of riches, but you got to get used to it, folks. When you're a Turton, it's terrible. And in the company of a Turton, it's just as bad. So there is one point, however, of all these 20 or so points that still I haven't stated. There is a topic that I've introduced not too long ago in these NAV briefings. And this topic is one which I wished to discuss. It is a topic I wish to elucidate. But my introduction of it may have been a little bit premature, because I understand that it is only now, from the instruction of Kamala and in the celebration of Kamala's wedding, that I can speak to you in an impeccable manner about passage of command. Passage of command. I teach passage of command in the union of love and death. Now, what I'm realizing this morning, standing here, looking at this magnificent conjunction, Venus in the morning sky, is that the instruction of Kamala regarding passage of command is a Dakini elixir operating in this conversation I have with you. It's a Dakini elixir that you could say we are discovering or even producing together. As long as you engage with me, or for any moment that you engage with me, in that discussion that includes love and death in the same breath, then Kamala's instruction of the passage of command can be acquired, but only in that way. So I haven't been fully able or prepared or qualified, whatever you want to say, to talk to you about passage of command until now. And what I can say about passage of command, which would be my translation, as it were, my rendition of Kamala instruction, is a direct transmutation of that ultimate and exclusive desire that I felt for Emma. Can you see that? Because I didn't surrender that desire, even though I lost its attainment, it now comes back, turned around into something of a transcendent and transpersonal efficacy. a transcendent and transpersonal beauty and elegance. To be worn as an ornament at Kamala's wedding. And what I would say about it now, just in this context, as I am myself in the sweet throes of this instruction, is that the passage of command is what ensures the futurity of planetary tantra. And it's really, really essential from Vivi's own point of view that those who are interactive with her have the confidence of Pistis Sophia, the faith of Sophia, that her confidence in her genius species would be realized by our confidence in ourselves. Our confidence can take many forms, but the supreme form of human confidence is the knowledge and mastery of the passage of command, of that particular operation. So, I've been talking with Kundry lately about how things are looking in the world, you know. To what extent would we allow ourselves to consider that the events of Gaia's correction are actually being reflected in the betterment and change in human affairs, in society, and in collective life? You know, I think about that all the time, don't you? Of course we wonder. It's only natural, because we are creatures who live in an awareness of the herd. We may be creatures who gather into bands. That tends to be the nature of kalikas. When a human animal becomes a kalika, that animal is more attracted to the life of a band or a troop or a pack, like a pack of wolves, and less attracted to participation in the life of the herd. And as we, but nevertheless, we see the life of the herd, we see these events happening on the world today, in the world. And we naturally wonder, I wonder, what's going to happen in the second half of correction? And I wonder if the power of planetary tantra as an instrument of correction is going to spread and break out more widely into the social and collective realms. And I was talking with Kundry about this, and I said, well, you know, it really doesn't matter if it does or not, because its success is guaranteed already just after the halfway point of these 3 years. The success of planetary tantra and the formulation by divine alchemy of Anthropos 11 is totally and completely assured, and you're in it if you select yourself to be in it. But I can say that, and that's just words. You can believe it, but that's just faith. Pistis Sophia is not faith. Pistis is not faith. Pistis has the same root as the word episteme, which means what is factual, what can be proven. So pistis is confidence that can be proven. So how would you and I, and all those in the GNE, prove to Gaia that we are 100% confident of the success of her correction based on the perfect initial conditions that she establishes in these 3 years? How would we show her our confidence? From the instruction of Kamala in the remaining 2 weeks, and from the increasing access that Kamala has to our conversations one-to-one, and to our group thinking, if you will, to our group concerns. She oversees our group concerns from this point on. Remember, these powerful perihelion hits in the Scorpion are just building up. And I saw so clearly, watching this omen today, this omen in the sky, I saw so clearly that all the components of her instruction are revealed in this morning omen, in the rising of Venus, in the Virgin, conjunct Saturn, with Saturn above, Mercury below, close to the fulcrum of the scales, and Arcturus higher in the sky at the apex of a celestial triangle. All of that reads in my mind as the mind of Kamala displayed in the sky. What I see in contemplating that sunrise configuration is further clarification of the Dakini and Mahavidya activity around the winter solstice. Until now, I had not been clear at all, as I said, about Kamala's own frequency, her profile, her style, her MO, the themes and topics that she specializes in, and the tonality of her transmitting frequency. I hadn't been clear on any of that. Now this is coming in. It's coming in strong and rich. Neither had I been clear on this mysterious matter, or I should say the rather confusing matter, of the emergence of the snake tamer and the scorpion. You know, the lower stars in the constellation of the snake tamer, the 13th constellation, are merged with the stars in the constellation of the scorpion. So the way that I had pictured that previously, for many, many decades now, or for three or four decades, was that the snake tamer, wrestling the great serpent, the Kundalini serpent, stands on the body of the scorpion. His left foot is on the heart of the scorpion, his knee bent, his right leg is stiff, with his foot on the stinger of the scorpion. What does this mean? What does this image teach us? Furthermore, as I pointed out before, the composite stars of the scorpion that actually lie on the path of the sun only occupy about 13 degrees, that is the upper part of the scorpion, the head and claws. The rest of the scorpion's body, as you can clearly see, hangs below the ecliptic, so that the scorpion appears to be emerging up from the waters of the Milky Way. And so the sun is only in the actual composite stars of the scorpion for 13 days, the end of November and the beginning of December. It passes alignment with Antares on December 3rd, my birthday, and then it shifts into the composite stars of the snake tamer. Now, what's that correlation? Well, you may recall that in the Tantric Zodiac, the correlation of the constellation of the snake tamer goes to an odd creature from the Tibetan zone who was called by the awkward name of Parnavasari. And she is the leaf-clad lady. She is a Dakini, associated with the special instructions uniquely connected to sacred plants and psychoactive plants. Okay, well, that's kind of theoretical. And what does that have to do with Kamala's teaching? Let's see, Kamala is a Mahavidya, a desire goddess who oversees happy unions, who oversees weddings, chemical weddings, or spiritual weddings. So what does Kamala have to do in such close proximity with this other leaf-clad lady, the Diamond Sky Dakini, that it's almost impossible to read from the crescent moon which one of those babes is pulling the shift? I haven't been able to clear that up very well, have I, in the last 4 years? Well, it came to me crystal clear this morning as I observed this omen and as I realized that I can speak to you, because the unattained desire I once felt for a woman has been converted entirely into Dakini instruction. The picture goes like this. Kamala has a special mission for us in Sophia's correction and in the 200 closing years of Kali Yuga. Her mission is to oversee the tremendously challenging and promising exercise of learning command and passage of command. We learn passage of command, and by demonstrating passage of command, we demonstrate to Sophia herself that our confidence in ourselves is real and provable, and that we have an immortal reach of power through the love for each other on the condition that we include in that love the responsibility to take life. And this is part of the great teaching, the rich and elegant teaching, I should say, that proceeds from Kamala. How then does this Diamond Sky Dakini fit into the picture? Well, look at the configuration this morning. Venus and Saturn were together, close to the left thigh of the Virgin, and above them, of course, is Spica, the star in the left hand of the Virgin. Spica, you know, is the signal of the entheogenic mysteries and of the gift of the psychoactive power plants and plant teachers provided to the human species so that it can handle its own insanity and correct itself and heal itself. So those teaching and healing plants are represented by the sheaf of wheat held in the left hand of the Virgin, and the sheaf of wheat is marked by the star Spica, or Mina, as it was known to the Egyptians. Now, what do the entheogenic mysteries have to do with Kamala? Well, they actually have more to do with the other Diamond Sky Dakini, whom I give the more user-friendly name of Satchamama. That is to say, she is the mother of the wisdom of the sacred plant world. So now it starts to make sense. The instruction of Satchamama is not going to be available unless it comes as an accessory to the instructions of Kamala. So you might remember at some point I raised the question a while back. I had done a shamanic session here on the terrace with one of the crew, and we asked the question, what is the role of the sacred plant teachers in your correction? And the answer that came from Vivi was, use them to bring people to beauty, and I will take it from there. That was a great answer and a stunning answer. But now, the moment has come to look a little deeper into that answer and to see the role that psychoactive plants and teacher plants play in the correction. Kamala teaches passage of command. We master that lesson. It is a way that we extend the power of love that we have for each other through time and space, that it becomes the transcendent power that secures planetary tantra into the next manifestation of the Anthropos. That's really what it is. And in certain respects, certain teachings, certain secrets and rituals of command and passage of command can only be learned by using psychoactive plants. So you see, that's the whole picture, and that is where Kamala and the diamond sky Dakini, that we may call for the moment Sachamama, although there's another name looming close, to be revealed after the winter solstice, or around that time, I would imagine, that is where the operations and magic of Kamala and Sachamama, of Scorpion and Snake Tamer, complement each other. Passage of command is the sorcerer's equivalent to love. You might recall that I said back in September, when Jill arrived to take residence in Ambergane House as the guardian, she said, "What is love in a sorcerer's world?" And without so much as pausing for a heartbeat, I said, "Passage of command." And so Kamala is a love goddess whose power and whose vision and inspiration weaves between the transpersonal and personal aspects of love, as we human animals are able to feel those aspects. She is a powerful witch commanding herself untold forces of desire. I would say she commands the deathless power of desire. And if there is any desire that is deathless in you, she reaches it and brings it up to her level to instruct you through that desire, as she has instructed me through the desire for unattainable beauty that I experienced in my tantric initiation of 2008. So that's all I would care to say or can say right now about Kamala. A lot of it is suggestive and should remain that way. More specific instruction is right at the tip of your tongue. So keep poised, stay poised for those droplets of heart medicine as we come up to the fabled moment of the winter solstice of 2012 in these last 2 weeks of the Kamala shift under the full moon close to the Pleiades, approaching the eye of the bull. The divine wisdom of Sophia reigns softly in the morning dew.